Hey guys, welcome to Jaden's podcast. Today I'll be talking about agoraphobia and panic attacks and how these are linked together. But before I do so, I want you to imagine you're in a room. The room could be big or small, doesn't really matter. But I want you to imagine that you don't know where the exit is. And you suddenly are overwhelmed with fear and a rapid heartbeat out of nowhere. Well, there you have it. You just experienced what exactly agoraphobia is. It's defined as a fear of marketplace, or in other words, being in situations where escape might be difficult, or that help wouldn't be available if things went wrong. Before I get into the meat of the content about agoraphobia, I want to jump in to some stuff about panic attacks. Panic attacks are kind of what causes agoraphobia. The definition of a panic attack is a sudden episode of intense fear that triggers severe physical reactions when there is no real danger or apparent cause. Panic attacks can be very frightening. I mean, a panic attack can occur. I mean, you feel like you're losing control, maybe even having a heart attack or even dying. I know my mom suffers from panic attacks a lot, and every time she ends up in the emergency room because she thinks that she's going to die or something. But the doctors just tell her, nope, it's just having another panic attack again. Many people do have just one or two panic attacks in their lifetime. The problem just goes away, like, after a stressful situation ends. But there is some out there that have recurrent and unexpected panic attacks and spend long periods in constant fear of another attack. Although panic attacks themselves aren't life-threatening, they can be frightening, as I just stated. Some symptoms of this are sense of impending doom of danger, fear of loss of control or death, rapid pounding heart rate, sweating, trembling or shaking, shortness of breath or tightness in your throat, chills, hot flashes, nausea, and so on and so forth. Some people experience what is referred to as limited symptom panic attacks, which are similar to full-blown panic attacks, but consist of fewer than four symptoms. Although anxiety is often accompanied by physical symptoms, such as a racing heart rate or knots in your stomach, what differentiates a panic attack from other anxiety symptoms is the intensity and duration of the symptoms. Panic attacks typically reach their peak level of intensity in 10 minutes or less, and then begin to subside. Due to the intensity of the symptoms and their tendency to mimic those of heart disease, thyroid problems, breathing disorders, and other illnesses, people with panic disorder often make many visits to emergency rooms. As I just stated, my mom, she makes a lot of visits. Panic attacks do and can occur unexpectedly during a calm state or even an anxious state. Although panic attacks are a defining characteristic of panic disorder, it is not uncommon for individuals to experience panic attacks in the context of other psychological disorders. For example, someone with social anxiety disorder might have a panic attack before giving a talk at a conference. Someone with obsessive compulsive disorder might have a panic attack when prevented from engaging in a ritual or compulsion. In the past, it might have taken months or years and lots of frustration before getting a proper diagnosis. Some people are afraid or embarrassed to tell anyone, including their doctors or loved ones, about what they are experiencing for fear of being seen as a hypochondriac. Instead, they choose to suffer in silence, distancing themselves from friends, family, and others who could be helpful. Other people suffering from panic attacks don't know they have a real and highly treatable disorder. As for my mom, she chose to tell us about it, and we told her it's smart to just go to the doctor and figure out what's wrong. And eventually she got her medication and she's doing better now. Now that I've talked a little bit about panic attacks, it's time for me to jump into what's most important about this podcast today. Agoraphobia. Like I said earlier, it's the fear of a marketplace. It's said often that agoraphobia is just a fear of open spaces, but it can be a lot more complex than that. For example, being afraid to travel on public transport or visiting shopping centers sounds a lot more complex than just being afraid of one open space. It's all about how your mind perceives it. For agoraphobia to be considered as a diagnosis, the agoraphobic situations must almost always create fear and anxiety that are out of proportion to the actual danger posed. And these signs of distress typically last for a minimum of about 6 months. Not everyone suffers from this. Some may say it's normal anxiety that everyone goes through at some point. That's not true at all. Some people have different places in their mind that anxiety tends to lodge itself. Typically, people with agoraphobia restrict themselves to a zone of safety that may include only the home or the immediate neighborhood. Any movement beyond the edges of this zone creates mounting anxiety. I actually have two friends that suffer from agoraphobia, and one of them does this. They like to stay in the house a lot, and they force me to come over and hang out. And this kind of interferes with our relationship because I don't want to go over to their house every time that they want to hang out. I want to go out and do things, and it's hard when they're suffering from this. Another friend of mine suffers from agoraphobia, but it isn't as intense as this other friend. She still likes to go out and do things, but if something triggers it, then I know we have to get out of the situation, so it will make it easier on her. The thing about agoraphobia that is usually misconstrued is that it can be environmental and it can also be internal. For example, one with the disorder may not want to participate in exercise activities because doing so either causes them to be sweaty or it causes their heart rate to go up. And this in return causes a panic attack. So it's not always about their environment. It's not always about the spaces that they're in. It sometimes is about what's going on in their brain. The cause of agoraphobia links back to panic disorders or an anxiety disorder involving panic attacks and moments of intense fear. Usually these people have no history of panic attacks, but in these cases, the people have a fear of general things like terrorism, illness, and this causes the agoraphobia. So this is saying that people who don't have panic attacks but have agoraphobia usually are fearful of the terrorism, illness, or the agoraphobia. Having agoraphobia can make it hard to drive, especially for those who live in congested areas or big cities. Things like traffic jams can spark up an attack. I know this at first hand. Me and my friend were on our way to Chicago, the friend with agoraphobia, by the way, and it started getting very, very, very congested because of the Chicago Cubs game that was going on that night. And she started freaking out. At first, I had no clue what to do. So I just got a bottle of water and told her to start drinking it. And then I randomly thought of a situation to where we could get out of the traffic jam if we needed to. And I also thought of how the medical services or whomever would need to come would be able to come if something bad were to happen. And she started to calm down. People with this disorder tend to look around wherever they may be for an exit. That's why at the beginning of this episode, I told you to imagine yourself not seeing an exit. Because if they see an exit, it can make it easier on them. After this short break, we're going to be looking at some causes of this disorder, some symptoms, and also some treatments. Welcome back to today's podcast. So far, we've talked about panic attacks, and now we're talking about agoraphobia. We got to the causes of agoraphobia. So, what exactly are the causes of it? Well, The etiology of most anxiety disorders, although not fully understood, has come into sharper focus in the last decade. In broad terms, the likelihood of developing anxiety involves a combination of life experiences, psychological traits, and even genetic factors. Heritability for agoraphobia is reported to be 61%, making the phobia most strongly linked to the genetic factor that represents predisposition to phobias. Some of the environmental factors that are known to be associated with the development of agoraphobia are experiencing stressful events, events like the death of a parent, being attacked or mugged, being raised in a household characterized by little warmth and high levels of overprotection. So I know my friend who suffers from this, she got it because she was overprotected as a kid. I mean, it's one of those things that parents feel like they need to be protective over their children, but this is a bad thing that can happen if they are too overprotective. And in her case, that's what happened. Now that I've explained what exactly agoraphobia is, it's time to move on to some symptoms and to some treatments. Some symptoms of agoraphobia include rapid heartbeat, feeling hot, sweaty, and even feeling ill. Agoraphobia is a disorder that takes a lot of treatment. Usually a person dealing with this needs to start out step by step and educate themselves on what exactly they are dealing with and what they could possibly do to change how they've been feeling with this disorder. Luckily for my listeners, you get the best of both worlds. You get the education and the treatments for it. It's recommended that people with agoraphobia do some self-help techniques like meditation or yoga, or just some things that help you calm your brain. I know that if I had it, I'd want to go shoot some hoops. That's what I do whenever I need to relieve some stress. I just go to the gym and take out all my frustrations there. Another thing that a lot of people tend to do is a self-help program. That is where you work through a handbook or computer course with a therapist. Another one of the most effective treatments is interoceptive exposure, where you are deliberately bringing on physical symptoms of anxiety that you're afraid of. So for example, I used to have a fear of swimming, and the only way to do that, my mom told me, was to actually swim. And I did it, and now I'm not afraid. But before you do any of this, contact your doctor and explain to them what you've been going through. Make sure you explain the situation that the symptoms happen in, though. Because if you don't, they'll just think that it's normal panic attacks that you're going through. But if you tell them it only happens in certain situations, they'll actually know that it's agoraphobia. It's not just regular panic attacks. There's a huge difference. To wrap up this episode of Jaden's podcast, I want to give you some fast facts about agoraphobia. And I want to share with you a story that I found online while researching. First, for some fast facts. Around one-third of people with agoraphobia eventually achieve a complete cure and remain free from any symptoms. So it's pretty much all about getting on the right medication and doing the right techniques. And once you found what helps you, make sure you stick with it so that you can be the best person you can be before this disorder came into your life. I know for my friends, they've found things that have helped them, and they tend to do that so that they don't have to suffer from this disorder anymore. I mean, it's nothing that anybody wants to go through, and it can be cured. So it's smart to just stick with a program that works for you. Another fact of agoraphobia is extremely funny to me, because the two females that are my best friends are the people who suffer from agoraphobia. Approximately 1.7% of adolescents and adults are diagnosed with agoraphobia. That being said, women are more likely to suffer from agoraphobia than men are. And now the story that I came across while researching this topic. Shirley B., a 46-year-old woman recovering from agoraphobia. What I found interesting about her is that she didn't even really know what she had.
She says she slipped a little day by day. She knew something was wrong. She just didn't understand how to stop it. She felt ashamed to ask for help because of the fear that someone would know her secret. She felt ashamed of herself, so she just fell deeper and deeper into the hole. She hid in her home by herself and neglected her health. She says that she had such a bad tooth infection, and she didn't even go out of the house because she feared that the dentist would say something. And finally, her daughter made her. So she goes to the dentist and is just shaking and scared and is just panicky. And the dentist knew something was wrong. So the dentist told her that her teeth were way too bad and that they couldn't do anything. So they put her on medication to fight the infection. And in the meantime, the dentist told her he could tell something was up and that she needed to go to the doctor because it wasn't normal. So that's exactly what she did. Once she went to the doctor, she knew that the doctor would find out what was going on. And that's exactly what happened. She goes on to say that she was shaking so badly, and the doctor had to hold her arm. The doctor talked to her for a while. She found herself asking questions such as, "Do you think I can be helped?" And the doctor goes, "Yes, I..." And then she decided to ask the question that frightened her most of all. And she asked if the doctor thought that she was crazy. And the doctor bent forward and told her, "No, you're not the only one dealing with this." After all this, she went to a therapist and got help. And now she's living a life that is best for her. So, moral of the story, you're not the only one. Don't be afraid to get help. If you think you're suffering from this disorder alone, you're not. Don't be afraid. As always, I'm going to end this episode with a joke. How do crazy people go through the forest? They take the psychopath. That's it for today, folks. Thank you for joining me, and I hope you listen in again. Peace.